Fig and esrog or a wheat. Grape because grapes grape because all trouble comes from grapes. And fig because they cover themselves up with fig leaves, which also teaches me how to think of the with it like chuva. And a wheat in an esrog, I'm not sure what the significance is, but a wheat is very significant because wheat means that it grew on wheat, grew on trees. Right? It's only after the curse. It's only after the curse that man has to take wheat and grind it up. In the Garden of Eden, In John Eden, it wasn't. You didn't have to take the wheat and grind it up. The bread, in other words, before the Avera, where would you gotten bread from? Where would you have gotten bread from before the original Avera?
Tree.
It would be a bread tree. You may have a Kaiser roll tree and an onion roll tree. Probably a Danish tree. There's some Krispy Kreme trees. Just whatever you want. Extra chocolate, extra water. It was on a tree. It's only afterwards that now, because Ruchel made Xera, that you got to take and you have to grind up the wheat. Right, so the idea of the apple, is only a Christian idea, and it's something that eventually, when Hollywood got to it, then we're finished. Then they made it into a whole what do you call it? But there was no the whole thing was a Christian idea. But according to Chazal, it's one of four things.
But
that's what it was.
I thought if she would have taken from the esrog and then. Like the whole
segula. To tell you what the Gemara said, I don't know what the segula is. Segula is a segula. I have no idea what's
going on. I haven't heard that if you're thinking from the esrog, it's going to happen.
Right, well, whatever the fruit was, none of it would happen. Whatever the fruit was, none of it, but she did. And therefore, we are in trouble. Page 590, Perek Aleph Mishnah Dalet in Pirkei Avos. Yosef ben Yoezer, is trade of Yosef ben Yochanan, is like Kibbutz Me'am. Yosef ben Yoezer from a place called Streda, and Yosef ben Yochanan, Ishmael Shalayim, they accepted, they were the on the next pair who received the tradition. Page 544, bottom of the page. Yosef ben Yehuda says the following: Yehi beischa beisvad lachachamim. Your home shall be a meeting place for the wise. Yehi beischa beisvad lachachamim. Your home shall be a meeting. Make your home into a meeting place for the wise. Ve'avei misabek b'afar ragleihem, and you should roll in the dust of their feet. And you should drink in thirstily their words. Make your home a meeting place for the wise. You shall roll at the dust of their feet. And how does he translate it? Sit at the dust of their feet and drink in thirstily their words. Now the first thing here is that the Torah is, the Mishnah is emphasizing to you what you should be shooting for when building a home. Your home shall be a meeting place for the wise. What does that really mean? Why would wise people want to meet in your home, first of all? Right? If you want wise people to be meeting in your home,
you guys are wise.
They got to be wise too. The same way you want to hang around them, they want to hang around you. People only want to hang around, likes attract. Likes also opposite of attract, right? There's no hard fast rules. But in this meeting, in area, certainly wise people, it's the same reason you want to be around wise people. I guess maybe the only reason why they want to be around you, number one. Number two, what's the Mishnah really telling you? Make your home a meeting place for the wise. What's the Mishnah telling you? Precious advice, gentlemen. Golden advice. Golden advice in life. If you expect to be successful with your family, you have to have the correct environment in your home. Right? Create the proper environment in your home. It's all about environment. Everything in life is about environment. Right? When you go into a shopping center, when you go into a supermarket, you know that they play music, special music in the background to create an environment. and make you buy an extra box of Cheerios. Right? You know, the bigger box instead of the smaller box, the more expensive one, the one in there. And next thing you know, you went in there, you get some frozen yogurt, and now you're coming out with a shopping cart that's stuffed to the gills, right? Because they got the music on it. Now, somebody told me recently
casinos.
That. Well, the casinos is the best example of all. I'll get the casinos in a second. But I don't expect any of you to know anything about casinos. That's right. I went shopping first. But what do you call it? Somebody told me recently that they now pipe in fragrances in shopping centers. That they actually have like a chocolate smell in the place which they send in through the ventilation system. Right? So all of a sudden, you know, here comes some guy goes, you're going shopping to get some Kleenex, and you're out, you know, you bought the whole Hershey company on the way out. Because it's like, hey, you know, I'm in the mood for Hershey, but you know, next thing you know, you come home, what about the Kleenex? Forgot about it. You didn't have room in the shopping cart. It's all M&Ms. That's it. Yeah, but it's all they got you, it's all about the environment, right? It's all set up a certain way with telling the best example is the casino. Right. The green, they've done studies. Green is the color. All the tables in the facility, that's why they have the music in the shopping. Why is the music real fast beat music? Right. Why don't they have some acid rock? And, you know, when you go into Kroger's, they ought to have some acid rock over there. You can see broken bottles all over the place. You know, they're going to be the glass bottle fight. And, you know, and it's like, well, that place is going to be trash. Right. They don't want that. Right. They play this little kind of happy, you know, let's spend my husband's money to kind of music. You know, so all the housewives over there, you know, you can go around and buy more than they really need, right? It's like when you walk into the casino, they've done studies. Green is a study that relaxes, the color relaxes people, right? The tables in the casino are generally green. What are they? Green, are there any blue? What's that? Green money. Yeah, money is very relaxed. Well, not, you know, not Israeli money, American money. You know, the green is very relaxing. They don't make the casino colors red. The tables aren't red. Because they're red and you lost a lot of money, you probably killed the croupier, you strangle him with your bare hands. Right? You get red, you know, you get upset. Yeah, they've done studies on it. They got it down to the science. Right? There are no windows in the casino. There are never any windows. You can't see what time it is. No day and no night. The Gisabo Yomam Balila. There's no day and no night. Right? There's no clocks in the casino. Right? You never know what's every time. The whole thing is conducive. Getting you, they got you to throw your money away as quickly as possible. Same thing when you go shopping. Same thing in any area where things are set up a certain way. The environment is absolutely critical to having a successful family. So the environment in your home, if you have a television in your home, for example, so it's like hooking up a big pipe to the city sewage system, right? And having that pipe now spill out manure into your living room and what do you call it? Into your living room. Sewage is spilling into your living room on a regular basis. Now you still flip on a TV or the internet or whatever it is, and next thing you know, your home environment is exactly what you're bringing into the home. And if you have people, when the ironies of life of the family sits around a TV, and you got, you know, one of these dramas, means Gilerai, it's a drama on TV, right? And next thing you know, you got some man and woman are talking about or doing things that everybody in the room, what would your reaction be? Imagine you invite guests to your house for Shabbos. Your kids are there and you got guests with your kids and your whole family is together, or we were at a wedding or a bar mitzvah or something. Next thing you know, there's a man and a woman over there who all of a sudden sitting at your table on Shabbos. They start discussing their most private, intimate life together. Right in front of you. And your kids are, you know, and they're in the middle of discussion, right there at the table. Everybody would blush. Right? So if all you do is put them in a box with a piece of glass in front of them, then all of a sudden it becomes okay. Then everybody gets around the TV, you know, eating peanuts, drinking Coke, and watching it. Right? You know, this is really important. Now the kids are watching. So what do you expect from the kids? That's the environment you have in your home. What's crucial to you and your children is going to be to create an environment at home where a person can grow. Therefore, the mission says you're based on this life. Your home is a meeting place for wise people. The benefit is going to be there's going to be spillover from those wise people, and that spillover is going to affect you and your entire family. So the reason I told you, if you're looking to get married, those of you thinking one day you want to get married, make sure the most important thing you can find in a girl besides money is that she should be married. She should be... I don't know why you're laughing. I'll say it again. Right? The most important thing you can find besides all her other sterling qualities, the most important thing to find is that she does not speak Lashon Hara. Make sure you find a girl who does not speak Lashon Hara. Why? Why? So there's a practical reason, and there's a more byproduct reason. The practical reason is that if she speaks Lashon Hara and you speak Lashon Hara, so then you spend a lifetime speaking Lashon Hara together, you do a lot of veras, and then you're going to burn in Gehenna for eternity. Right? That is one very practical reason why she shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. Because if you get Lashon Hara, every day is like, who did you see? I can't stand the boss, and I can't stand the neighbors, I can't stand this one. And your whole life is going to be replete with Lashon Hara, number one. Number two, it's born dead. It's because your wife, there's one of the Amorim who was Rabbi Yosef said, where Rabbi Yosef said, I never called my wife, I always referred to her as my home. Never referred to his wife as my wife, he referred to her as his home. Because your wife is your home. Your home environment, everything in your home is going to revolve around your wife. Somebody once said, a happy wife is a happy life. Right? And if your wife is not happy, you will not be happy. And it's worth doing everything. You've got to turn cartwheels to keep her happy, otherwise you're going to be miserable anyway. And your wife is the environment in the home. Therefore, if she speaks Lashon Hara, that means what she's doing is she's finding what's negative in other people. She's finding the bad in other people. If she finds the bad in other people, so number one, she's going to find the bad in you. And number two, she's going to find the bad in everything in life. She'll tell you why your job isn't good, and why you're not earning enough money, and why your home is not good, or why the car is not good, or why the teachers are not good. Everything around your entire environment is going to be an environment that's going to be a constant flow of negative. Constant negative energy. And therefore, the Mishnah says you have to create an environment in your home which is conducive for based vav l'chachamim. So you walk into some Torah homes, what's the first thing you notice? What kind of furniture do they have in the Torah homes they have to show? What do you see on the walls?
Bookshelves.
Bookshelves all over the place. Sorry. Right? Like sometimes you're in a place you feel like you walked into an ancient library. And you walk into the living room. There's barely room for a couch. Right, and it creates a certain environment. It's more conducive. Right, when you walk into a shul, the whole idea: why do you daven in the shul? Supposed to daven with the minion, you daven in the shul. What's the point? There's a reason for it. You daven with the minion because besides the spiritual quotient, which is well, 10 men create a spiritual energy and it rises up and it penetrates past the angels who bring the tefillah and so on and so forth, all of which is true. There's a practical reason. When you're in a shul with the pretend other guys who are shaking back and forth, so you're going to shake back and forth a little bit too, and then you can concentrate a little bit because you want people to think that you're pious also. And because you're looking in your siddur, you're going to start davening. When you daven in a shul, the environment in a shul is different. When you daven at home, you put on your pajamas, and you throw on your slippers, and you daven until it takes exactly 4 minutes, right? Or 5, you put on your shul, right? You know, so they, you know, they're, when you daven in shul. Right? The whole environment. Wow, you know, there's a Aron Kodesh and a Sefer Torah and there's a Gabbai telling everybody to be quiet. The whole thing is very conducive to davening. Right? And the environment is going to have a big effect on you. That's the first thing the Mishnah is telling you. The Heve Misabek Vafer Aglaim, you must sit at the dust of their feet. That means you got to humble yourself in order to absorb from the wise. That they show about some is the brain, you have to drink in thirstily their words. Now, the Mishnah throws in an extra word over here, which is to drink in thirstily. Drink in what they have to say, drink it in. But drink it in thirstily. Why? Because there are two reasons people drink. You may drink because, you drink a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, you're sipping, that's almost a social drink. You drink a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, you drink some sugar drinkle also, right? But you're not thirsty when you drink it. You're drinking it because of whatever reason, and you sip it, depending on how much you're sipping or if you're shotgunning, depending on what you're doing. But usually you're sipping it, right? Now, if you finish, if you're hot and sweaty, and you grab a Pepsi because you're in the middle of a basketball game and you're thirsty, then you drink it and it look like you pour it out. It says drink in thirstily. Right, that means take it in and sip it, you know, a little bit. Whatever they have to say, whatever the wise have to say, drink it in. Right? Drink it in and drink it in thirstily, because eventually, even if you don't understand it right away, eventually take it all in, and eventually it'll sit in there like chalk on a fire, and eventually it'll simmer a little bit, and then you'll understand eventually what they're trying to get at. Now, the next Mishnah is probably the most misunderstood Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Yosef ben Yochanan Ishu Shlaim Omer. Yosef ben Yochanan says the following. I trouble somebody just to open that with that window over there for just a moment. Yosef ben Yochanan Ishu Shlaim Omer. Yehi based up Pasuach Lerbacha. Your home shall be open. He translates, your home shall be open wide. Right, Lirbacha literally means for profit. He translates, let your home be open wide. And the example that they use is Avram Avinu, who had a tent, and on all four sides there was an entrance. Right? He had this big mansion tent out in the desert, and it was a really big tent. Whatever direction somebody would come from, there was an entrance on four sides so that people could come into the tent. Sometimes you see, you walk up the house, there's no solicitors. Like, no visitors, no solicitors. Like, why they only beware of dogs? You know, that sort of thing. You know, which is very unwelcoming. Avram Avinu was the classic example of, he's trying to welcome everybody. He basically was still the welcome of you and me, and poor shall be the members of your home. That means you should open up your home wide and allow the poor into your home. Allow the poor entrance into your home. And there's no coincidence that it says the poor shall be members of your home, which is really teaching you what? Teaching you stucco, but even more, what's the even like higher level of stucco? That what?
Equality. The thing is, really treat them like your children.
Exactly. Treat them like the members of your home. When the poor come into your home, really make them feel comfortable. Right? There have been legendary figures in Jewish history. The Brisker Rav. Everybody knows the Brisker Rav's brilliance. Right? The Brisker Rav's own children said they rarely could find a bed for themselves because all the beds in the house were being slept on by vagrants and wanderers. People used to come in, just, you know, they know they get a meal, so they get a place to sleep. And the kids, you know, were taught, you know, how to get again. You have to always take into consideration if it's going to have a sort of traumatic effect on your child children, because you have beggars in the home and your children therefore abandon you and go off to Tibet, so that's not a great idea. But if your children can absorb a lesson from this, what happened to you? Why did you run off? Well, my father sacrificed me for the poor people. That's not a good thing, but at least to show them that, you know, poor, that the poor people come into the home and you treat the poor people. Probably the classic story they tell is this guy, this poor guy was in Rabbi, do you ever read a book called For the Boss? This poor guy was in the house for Shabbos, and he did something and he got real upset, so he just spilled his chont. He slammed his chont on or something, and he was so embarrassed he got up and he ran out. So Rabbi Herman went chasing after him. The guy thought he was going to yell at him. The guy started running. Rabbi Herman finally caught him. He said, "Come! I got another bowl of chont for you." You know that the poor have to be treated. You have to really treat the poor with kid gloves. Now. That's level one. Level two is the Yuanim B'nei Be'Sechamim. What is the definition of poverty? What is the definition? If you ever say somebody is poor, what does it mean? How do you define poor? How would you define poor? What's that?
Can't provide their own basic needs.
Can't provide their own basic needs. That means something is missing. Right? Something is missing. Right? At any level, something is missing. Whenever you're missing something, vis-a-vis that thing, you're poor. Right? You got to be that aware. If I've got everything I need except the car, so, you know, I am poor because I don't have a car. I can't afford a car. And therefore, I am poor. Or, if I could afford a car, I can't afford a Mercedes. I am poor enough that I can't afford a car. In other words, when you're missing something, don't knock it until you tried it. Scottie Pippen had an $80,000 Mercedes. Right? Good car. Michael Jordan drove a black Mercedes. Right? Good car. Mercedes is a good car. Best car to be in. Perfect, got to be in an accident. Has to show best, safest car to be in is a Mercedes. Right? I think it's a Mercedes or a Volvo. Those are the strongest, what do you call it? Strongest frames for a car. Right? It's the only better, I guess, best thing to be than a tank. Right? But the what do you call it? What's that?
Hummers.
Yeah, well, these are supposed to be, what do you call it? Yeah, I'm not talking about trucks. You know? Yeah, definitely, you have a choice to be in a truck. You know, hey, better to be in a truck than be in a car if you do collide. That's not going to all surveys, all studies indicate, you know, better to be in a Mack than to be in a Subaru when the two disagree. No question about it. But the definition of poverty is that you're missing something. And Mishnah says, "V'yu anim b'nei beit secha." Poor shall be the members of your home. They did a study once in going back probably a good 10-15 years. At the time, the study showed the highest neighborhood for suicides in the United States, the highest rate of teenage suicide in the United States, was Lakeshore Drive in Chicago. And they finally finished first in something. Right? Lakeshore Drive in Chicago had the highest rate of teen suicide. Right? This is one of the most, I think it's the third most expensive pieces of real strips of real estate in the country. Right? And they had the highest teen suicide rate. Right? The inner city is about three blocks away. Three blocks away, you got one of the most hardcore slums and ghettos in the country. No suicide there. The homicide, yeah, but there's no suicide. Right? No suicide there. Right? Ironically, Where do you think there's a higher rate of suicide among poor people or among rich people?
Rich
people. Is that interesting? Rich people commit suicide. Poor people haven't got time to commit suicide. I can imagine some poor guy saying, you know, Edna, I think I'm going to end it all. The Harold, you got to go to work, right? Now, stop with the nonsense. They go, all right, you know, I give in. And he goes off to work. You know, a rich guy who's got, you know, what's the point of all this? Right? The rich guy kills himself. He's got everything. Right? There's a guy, Freddie Prinze. You ever hear Freddie Prinze?
Yeah.
Right? Oh, there's a Freddie Prinze Jr., right?
Yeah.
I never met Junior. I met Senior. I knew the Tata. Right? The Chico and the Man, right? Now, Freddie Prinze was arguably the most talented and funny. He's the funniest guy I've ever seen outside of Robin Williams. And as far as versatility, for Robin Williams, you know, about to go. Yeah, but anyway, this guy was, you know, the funniest guy. He had everything going for, I think it was 22 at the time, and he killed himself. And he left a note. He just left a few words. He left, I couldn't handle it. Okay? So I love that. I couldn't handle it. And my friend and I, every time we ended up, you know, in a situation where we're working for about, you know, minimum wage or something, we'd look at each other and say, I couldn't handle it. You know, I could handle it. I could handle it. Everybody, every 22-year-old in the country thought I could handle it. Right? But he had everything. And absolutely everything. He killed himself. Right? Brian Epstein was the manager of the Beatles. He killed himself. He had, I think, it was about 12 Rolls Royces. Right, he killed himself. He left on the printed on the front page of the English news on the English newspapers the next day. The suicide note was: I have everything, but I have nothing. Yeah. That's what Brian Epstein. Right? Nice Yiddish here, right? Brian Epstein, Freddie Prinze was, and Brian Prinze was, right? Brian Epstein was, right? Yeah, I mean, the rich commit suicide because at a certain point you thought I'm not missing anything. The poor, you've always got something that you're looking for. Right? I got no reason to commit suicide because I still haven't got a car yet. Once I get a car, then I can commit suicide, but I haven't got the car yet. give me a chance. I can't commit suicide now. I still haven't gotten the car yet. Right? So the poor are in a situation. The mission comes along. The mission says that you should not overindulge your children or your family. Your own family members should feel that they don't have, there should be, now I don't want to use the word deprivation, but it is a mistake to indulge your children. It is a mistake to overindulge them. Because when you overindulge them, they become spoiled. Where is that line of overindulgence and underindulgence? Very difficult line to draw. If I could draw a concrete line, I'd be a wealthy man. And in our day and age, it is important. We probably, it's not like your grandparents, my parents, that generation, that kind of that little children are to be seen and not heard, and they actually respect their parents and they speak to their parents, and you know, they never yelled at their parents and never talked over their parents. My parents wouldn't have thought of ever, ever, ever speaking, raising their voice to their parents. Certainly would have never thought of talking back, and I barely spoke back to my parents, meaning my dad. Right? I barely spoke back, you know, and even my mom, you know, that was the cardinal sin. When I was growing up, there was only one sin, and there was one sin, and it was a cardinal sin, and that was to raise my voice to my mother. I raised my voice to my mother, I know where my dad appeared from. Right? All the time, I raised my voice, and the next thing you know, he was there. Right? And he was there, and that was absolutely not allowed. And to my father, I never, ever, ever raised my voice in my life to my father. And maybe once. And I certainly never had a habamina to raise my voice. It didn't even cross my mind. I was just outside of my own kids. I'm terrified of them. You know, don't worry, especially the girls. Right? The boys, boys still, you can beat them into submission. But the girls, yeah, there's no reasoning with them. In our generation, you know, parents are terrified that the street is different. It's a different street than when I was growing up. The sensations are different. The lures are different. The dangers, the spiritual dangers are different. You can't deprive your kids of too much because you don't give them anything. So they're going to find something else to get busy with, right? And you have to try to decide, okay, now where do I indulge? But the mission is telling you that at the point that you've determined that it's indulgent, but that's not the healthiest thing for children. You don't have to spoil children. As long as they feel that you love them, as long as the children feel that the parents love them and are living for them, you don't have to spoil them with material, right? But no, you can say no. Parents are allowed to say no. Where to draw that line is a very, very tricky line. Now, look at the next section of the mission said like this. This is always misunderstood. The altarve sicha ima isha. Do not overindulge in conversation with the woman. The ishto amru kal vachomer beishas chavera. This was said regarding one's wife and certainly somebody else's wife. All right, we're going to have to leave this for next time because this is very, very involved and time is up. But we're going to have to go into this altarve sicha ima isha, the idea of not overindulging in conversation with a woman. Right? Because it does not say in the Mishnah not to talk to the woman or your wife. It says do not over-talk her.
Not to your wife.
It says.
Then it corrects itself.
No, it doesn't correct itself. It doesn't correct itself. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean your wife. No. It says, this was said regarding your wife and certainly someone else's wife.
Even more
so, somebody else's wife. It doesn't say, oh, we don't mean your wife, but your wife is perfectly okay. Say whatever you want so she can see what a fool you are. Right? That doesn't say, right? That one of the most important things to do is not to overdose, because your wife loses respect. The more you talk, the less respect your wife has for you. The less respect your wife has for you. The more you listen to her, the more respect she has for you. We'll talk about that next time.